Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast. Probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and this week, Pete Donaldson is on holiday somewhere very sunny and hot and wonderful, and I hate him and I'm jealous. I think he was in the Canary Islands. I don't know if it's a secret. I can't remember if he told us in last week's episode. But standing in for Pete, I have found a guest down the back streets and the alleyways of Tokyo. His name is also Pete. So when we read out the questions from you guys later on, it'll be like nothing has changed. It'll be like nothing is different. He is a NHK World presenter on Japanese TV. He is a teacher to the rich and famous. He's an up-and-coming Twitch streamer known as Premier 2. And more recently, earlier this year, he joined me on a trip to Hokkaido, to the most northern point in Japan. He is, of course, Pete, Premier 2, from Kansas. How are you doing, Pete?
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm doing quite well.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. This is a very exciting podcast to be a part of. I understand
that sounds sarcastic.
No. I'm serious. I'm a big fan. And Pete Donaldson...
Do you listen every week?
Well, I'm not going to... Yes, I do. The problem is I understand that Pete Donaldson provides a lot of comedy, a lot of insights, and he's a really unique voice. And to downgrade so severely this week is a tough one. But I think everyone will manage.
Pete Donaldson loves you. He talks about you every now and then, and he describes you as a charisma bomb. If we had a Abroad in Japan Cinematic Universe Top Trumps, your card would be charisma, 10 out of 10.
Oh.
Everything else, not 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I think it's like in an RPG, if you build a character, that's the only stat I have. No intelligence, strength, or dexterity. Just charisma.
You're selling yourself short, Pete.
Well, I appreciate it.
But I was speaking to Pete the other day, and he has had one hell of a career in Japan as a teacher. And I know we've talked about teaching in Japan before with various folks, but your career as a teacher has been not only the most interesting, but probably the most up and down. Like, you've told me some real horror stories. And so I want to, like, dive into your 10 years of teaching, because it's been over
10 years, just so.
Absolutely. But first things first, how did we meet and when did we meet?
I think it's been about 4 or 5 years. I was at a nomikai for my teaching job. And a nomikai is like a drinking party at the end of year or something like that. I got very drunk and went to a nijikai, which is a second party, by myself, to a bar in Shinjuku where it's Mario themed with all different Mario drinks and wonderful place, very small. And you came in with two ladies on each arm and you said, "Hello, mate. What are you doing here?" And I said, "Hi, welcome to the bar." And you were insistent that I recognized you. And you said, "Don't you know me? I know. You recognize me from my YouTube channel. 250,000 subscribers."
Don't remember that bit.
You claim
I gave you a business card.
I have the business card.
Oh, God.
And it has this thing on it. It says, you know, Chris Broad, 250,000 plus subscribers.
It's funny, my impression of you wasn't overly good that time.
I don't blame you.
I thought you were like the sleazy guy in the corner who was taking his luck and trying to chat up the two girls I was with.
Who
was not unattractive,
right.
And very
no,
cool
very
girls.
Kind.
But you were like, "I'm going to make you a quiz."
I did.
And we were like, "Okay, you go and do that." And Pete went off into the corner, drunk as hell, and over the period of 35 minutes, conjured up a relatively impressive quiz.
Yeah.
Not, you know, the sort of quiz you would see on Japanese TV. And equally, when I said, I'm a YouTuber, and you were like, I've never seen it. You were like, oh, I've been on Japanese TV. You might have seen me on NHK World. And I was like, no, nobody's seen that.
It was two ships crossing in the night. Unfortunately, mine crashed, my career, and yours suddenly took off to the realm of 3 million plus subscribers.
I've got 2.5.
I mean, when this is released, I'm sure another 500,000 will have
dead
already.
To true.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is after that, we didn't speak ever again for a few months. And then I can't remember what happened. Out of the blue, one of us messaged each other.
I think it was me begging for... No, I think actually what we had talked about at that time was I've been studying acting my whole life. Mm. That was what I went to school for. And you had shown a little bit of interest in, you know, how do you get into character? You were kind of asking some questions about
acting.
That's
right, yeah.
Yeah. And we met at a coffee shop at a later date to talk about... Right before you went on Journey Across Japan.
Yes, yeah.
The first one. And we talked about, you know, performance and stuff like that.
I remember you... Gave me a notebook.
You gave Moleskine.
Me a Moleskine notebook.
That you promptly, I found in the trash 2 hours later.
But that was quite weird, actually. I've still not made that film that we talked about. So,
it's okay.
But since then, Pete and I have become very good friends. We've traveled a lot. We traveled to Hokkaido back in, I think, March this year, right?
It was last February.
This year, in February.
What? No. Yes, you're right.
It's already
Time's
forgotten.
Time's lost meaning with it's this whole forgotten. Coronavirus thing, you know?
It has got very odd.
Yeah, but, it was last February. We went on a massive trip from Hakodate all the way to Wakanai.
Absolutely, to find your broken mug that Natsuki gave you.
Well, yeah, mission accomplished, so to speak.
Natsuki gave Pete a mug for his birthday, because you're good friends with Natsuki, right? Mm-hmm. And Pete broke the mug and went to go and try and find it. Pete asked Natsuki, where did you buy the mug, Natsuki? And Natsuki said, Wakanai.
No, he actually said, I bought it in a shop in Wakanai. He used both English and Japanese. That's crucial to me misunderstanding it.
And Wakanai means, Wakanai means I don't remember, I don't know. But Pete interpreted that as Wakanai.
Yeah, that was a slight mistake.
And we ended up going to Wakanai, which is the most northern town in all of Japan. And we didn't really... It's a pretty anticlimactic experience, that whole trip.
The real shame was that I didn't know that Natsuki bought the mug at a $1 store. That's where we could have bought it anywhere.
Dear, oh dear. What a nightmare.
But we're not here to relive those past experiences, are we?
We're not. Although that video, I'd kind of forgotten about it because I've been so busy. I've been so busy doing Journey Across Japan. But a very big YouTuber, someone whose videos I watch, Tom Scott, he shouted out in a newsletter he does every week. To his many followers. It's a really weird video for him to pick out.
But not to me.
Of course, you're right. But it was really weird. He sort of said, oh, you should everyone watch this video. And it was our Hokkaido video. And I wonder why he chose that one specifically. Hopefully, sometime when he comes to Japan, I'll get to ask him. But
it really is. Out of the whole catalogue of videos that you've made, it's quite bizarre to choose where, you know... Two stupid guys go to the northernmost point.
I think there was a real kind of sense of adventure to that trip, though. When I watch it back, you know, all the crazy things we saw along the way, the Buddhas in the snow, the Easter Island heads,
the treasure map that we're following.
The treasure map, the shining house in the middle of the nothing. Like, it was a really cool trip.
Yeah,
and,
it was.
If you haven't seen it, I strongly urge you go and watch it, because it's actually a really fun video. But on to teaching... So let's talk a bit about your story and your journey. And also, NHK World, you're a presenter on Japanese TV.
Yeah, for the past 7 or 8 years, I've worked for a program called Cool Japan.
Cool Japan.
And I want to preface this by saying I'm one of many various international guests. I'm not the main host, but I'm a regular contributor as a representative of the United States of America. 8 different countries are on each show.
Oh, right, right.
Right, and we talk about, is this cool in your country? How does it change from your country?
Right.
A certain theme or topic.
I mean, I'm pretty vocal, usually, about my not-so-great experiences on Japanese TV. I'm not a fan of Japanese TV. How's your kind of experiences been over the last few years on NHK Cool Japan?
For me, speaking truthfully, it's been a really nice opportunity to go to parts of Japan or see a kind of behind-the-curtains look at some of the culturally interesting things about this country.
Mm.
Because of the situation where it's like, today's theme is tea, you might get to go to like a tea factory, which on its face doesn't sound so interesting.
Right.
But when you get the access that they have...
Don't know, Pete. Tea factory. I'm sold.
Well, maybe I should have chosen a more interesting one than that, but there's been several episodes I really enjoyed. So for my experience, they've been nothing short of amazing. But I can easily understand how it can be considered like schlock or you know, propaganda almost for a lot of the Japanese TV shows.
I don't know. I mean, the times that I've gone on, they've always wanted me to play a sort of role, the role of the foreign person, and
yeah,
not really, I can't really give my own real opinions, I've found. But
I will say on that show, they highly encourage you to be critical of Japan.
So have you ever been to a restaurant in cool Japan, eating something, going, ah, it's actually pretty shit?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I did. It was the episode on some sort of like cognac.
Konnyaku. Oh, like
it's like a potato, but
jelly.
It's a gelatinous potato.
It's really horrible, yeah.
It's horrible. And they made it into a zero-calorie pasta. And they brought us all out this plate and said, we want you to try this with, you know, tomato sauce or whatever. It was the most ghastly thing I've ever eaten in my entire life. And I openly said so. Like, this is awful. This will not be popular in America.
And how did that go down?
I was fired promptly and I haven't been back on since. No, they were like, okay, so yeah, this is not a good, you know, thing for Americans, perhaps.
Right. Yeah. Which is fair enough.
Yeah, and so they're okay with it. It's just, you know.
My problem with cool Japan is it sounds like propaganda.
Yeah,
it's like, imagine like cool England, you know, it sends a shudder down my spine. Or cool America. Imagine like they've got like Japanese people and Chinese and folks from Asia living in America to be on a show called Cool America.
Yeah, this is what
and then
Japan
they went
does.
To like In-N-Out Burger. And they're like, oh, In-N-Out Burger's good. America culture, Segoy. Like, it's... I don't know. It's all a bit propaganda-y, and it makes me feel a bit weird and cold and dead.
I really can't fault you for that. But I think Japan does one thing so well is that it markets itself amazingly on the global stage. You know,
right.
They've really excelled in saying, like, our food is amazing, our culture is amazing.
Right, yeah.
So... it's unsurprising that cool Japan is popular.
Is Japan cool?
Well, there are bits and pieces. I think overwhelmingly yes, but there are some real negative aspects to living here.
Which I'm sure we'll get into. One of them is teaching in Japan.
Teaching in Japan.
So we've both done it, but I did it only for 3 years. And I can't pretend like I, you know, 3 years is a fair long time. I think I taught 200 or 2,000 hours of teaching when I weighed it up. But what you've done is... considerably more substantial. I'd say you're closer to a real teacher. Because they say that people coming to Japan on the JET program, like I did, you get sort of a light experience. You get to have more holiday, the pay is better, and you get treated better because it's a government-funded scheme. Whereas you didn't go on JET, you've been on various companies and you've had various experiences, many of them bad, from what you tell me.
Yeah, I think I'm uniquely qualified to explain a wide range of teaching opportunities and contracts. I think I can help.
But I think whether you're interested in teaching in Japan or not, it's just funny. Hearing your stories, they're brutal. Like, it's insane, like some of the stuff you've had to do. So first things first,
yeah.
You finished college and you did a degree in...
Theater. A terrible mistake. So waiting tables is basically my degree.
And you wanted to be an actor, but you went to L.A., decided
didn't like it.
You hated LA and got out there quick. Mm-hmm. And then you pointed at a map and went, Japan, let's go.
Well, my minor was Japanese history when I was in college. And I thought going to Japan would be an opportunity to kind of reset because I was not making any money. I was in dire straits in the United States. And I thought this would be a fun opportunity.
How old were you?
26. I graduated quite late in college. So
you came, I came in when I was 22. You came 26.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I had missed the deadline for the JET program, the Japanese Exchange Government Opportunity, and they said, okay, well, in the interview, you pass this, but we can't interview you until next December. So it was like 8 months of waiting.
So you might have been on the JET program. It's just a question of bad timing.
I probably would have been declined anyway, but let's
not
be real.
Not necessarily.
Maybe not. But yeah, it's poor timing. So I was searching day and night for any opportunity I could get. And there was one that said, do you like beaches and mountains? And I was like, yes. Then please come to Niigata. We will love to have you.
I don't like Niigata. I think I've been upfront about that.
The western kind of side of Japan, the Sea of Japan side.
The people there are lovely, but there's just Niigata's just one big, long rice, big plain.
Yes.
Filled with rice fields and not much else.
You're right. But that was the job I applied for, and unfortunately, right when they started saying, like, we think you've got it, the Tohoku earthquake of 2011 happened.
Right, yeah.
And everything was thrown in the air. Eventually, I did get the job, and I came to Japan 2 weeks after the earthquake, and so my story begins.
That's insane. So you came to Japan straight after the Fukushima nuclear disaster. Like, that takes balls. I know a lot of people at that time. I was looking to come to Japan at that point. I was applying for the JET program that year. And, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, it's time to leave Japan now. And there was a lot of misinformation and a lot of fear around radiation and whatnot. Mm. And against that, you boarded an American Airlines flight and straight to Narita Airport to begin.
With my entire life's possessions in three bags. I had nowhere else to go and nothing else to have.
That's kind of cool, though.
It was a great adventure. And I was quite stupid because the contract I agreed to was only 3 months.
Right.
So I basically signed over my future on a hope that it'll work out in 3 months.
Oh, like, God.
Because after that contract was finished, they weren't promising any renewals.
After 3 months?
That was it. It was a 3-month contract.
Isn't that what, 3 months?
Yeah, well, we were all replacement teachers because the previous entire group had been fired for something inappropriate.
Like what?
Well, we think there might have been some diddling.
Drugs.
Well, that sure, or children things.
Oh, my God.
It's bad. And so it was really awkward, and we were told repeatedly in training simple rules to safeguard against that, which I'll tell you in a minute.
Right.
So it was an unfortunate situation that two or three of the foreigners, perhaps in Niigata's school of, you know, education board or whatever, they did some really inappropriate stuff, and then they got fired. And so, but they had all these empty spots of schools. So that there's only a 3-month contract.
God, and you would have been going into this environment against the backdrop of, you know, the reputation would have been shredded for foreigners in that area. Because it happened to where I ended up. You know, teachers had done things like that and things had gone wrong. One guy did drugs, I think, ended up in prison. You know, when a teacher in Japan does something wrong, an English teacher from overseas, it does the rounds and it can sour the reputation of everyone and it can really fuck everything right up.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that sometimes we're looked at as like a general unit. Like, I know it sounds crazy to say that, but like the foreign teacher block, if one person screws up, it really reflects on everyone.
Absolutely.
So they one person got in trouble and they let go of the contract of everybody on that.
Oh, so only one person?
Yeah, and I actually think what happened was, the rumor is, while they were teaching a lesson, they said, I want to show you a quick video of this thing. And instead of the video being educational, it accidentally loaded up some personal private pornographic video that they had filmed to the elementary school students.
But then why did they fire everyone?
I think that the my understanding of it was, at this time, the Board of Education said, you know, we don't want to work with your company.
So the company lost the contract.
Yeah, and then they hired my company came in, and they said, we'll have teachers sent out to you on a temporary 3-month contract, and you don't have to renew it.
Binders full of teachers.
Binders full of teachers. It was a wild time.
A fresh box of teachers straight off the plane from America.
Yep.
All right, so you arrive in Narita Airport. Jet-lagged and tired.
I immediately take a bus to Ibaraki, which is about 2 or 3 hours away, to a place called Mito for training. I sleep, we wake up for training, and I get to the office, and it's an absolute disaster. There's binders on the floor, the pictures had fallen off the wall, a bookshelf had been toppled over, and we were sitting in these desks, and the guy who, bless him, he looked quite, you know, crazed and disoriented. He was our trainer, and this was right after the earthquake, and their head office had not had a chance to fully
of course.
Be built.
Only 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks. Yeah. And so he said, okay, here's what we're doing. You guys are going to be going out to Niigata, and here's some rules. And there's only one. He only gave us one real general rule, and it was don't make sexual advances towards any of the students or teachers.
That's always good advice to live by.
I thought that was pretty clear, just being a human being.
And yet I know plenty of stories where that hasn't happened.
It's incredibly insane that people can't do that. But unfortunately, we didn't get any teaching experience or any kind of advice on how to deal with Japanese teachers or students.
God.
So it was an interesting trip. So I finished the training.
So the training was essentially, don't fuck up.
And he repeated that several times, that this 3-month contract, if we want to renew it, we cannot screw this up.
Right.
So they give me a car, which is nice because I used to drive a pizza delivery man. And I say, okay, what's going on? And they gave me a map, which is nice. And then they put a washing machine in my back seat for my clothes. And they said, just drive to Niigata. It's about 8 hours west. That was it.
So, that sounds like a Top Gear challenge, let alone
horrific.
A new job. So a paper map.
Yeah, because I didn't have a cell phone. This was 2011.
Oh,
I just moved here. Even then, cell phones, like smartphones, were relatively new.
That's terrifying. Like, on the JET program, you get flown in, you get like a handler who delivers you to the principal and the teachers of your school. It's all very luxurious experience. You're in a car alone driving through the Japan countryside with a washing machine on your back.
Yeah, and the drive is supposed to be about 7 hours. I think it took me 13.
13 hours.
Because I got lost at several rest areas saying, you know, I don't speak Japanese, so I was like, Niigata wo doku desu ka? And they, zenzen wakannai. And the good news is I finally made it a little after like midnight or something ridiculous.
Right.
And we were supposed to meet. I had another map that said from McDonald's, you drive to this apartment. And on the basement of the apartment, there's a man waiting for you.
Okay. Okay. So like a fetch quest.
It was my RPG starter quest. And I get to the apartment. And everyone's, you know, they're like, oh, you made it. We had pizza and stuff, but we didn't know if you were coming. So there's nothing left. And
brilliant.
Okay. And he said, let's start the meeting, even though it's quite late. Let's review it. And they had this big map, you know, like this huge, over an entire dinner table size map.
Of Niigata.
Of Joetsu, the city I was staying in.
Right.
And they unfurl it, and there's like a swinging lamp above it where you can barely make it out. And, you know, I felt like we were all smoking and looking over these
targets. It's like a war room.
It's what it felt like. And there was X's all over the map in different colors for each teacher that says, like, here are your schools. And so we could easily see, like, this is where we're living. Here's our schools. And mine was some, you know, shit brown color, and I was looking for it everywhere. I can't find it. My fear is, my God, what if I don't have any schools?
Right.
And I've driven to the wrong destination.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're searching, and then we unfurl the map another 3 feet.
My God.
And my nine schools were up in the mountains of Japan.
Wow.
45 minutes by drive from the apartment.
Oh, my God.
And this is a really unique opportunity to give it some context. I taught at an elementary school that had 31 students total. So one first grader, 4 second graders, and so on.
How does that work in a classroom?
It was very challenging because, you know, the fifth grade class was just 5 girls and like the teacher. So it was interesting. Or like the second grade class, there was like, you know, 4 children, and then they also brought in the first grader because he was the only one. So they kind of did it together. It was unlike anything I've ever experienced. And this was a very heavy agriculture area.
Right, yeah.
So
very rural.
Extremely.
Absurdly, yeah.
And we didn't teach any English lessons, I found out very quickly. It was more about planting rice, you know, learning about different farming equipment.
When you were standing in a field planting rice, were you like, have I made the right decision here?
There was actually an interesting story about that. They told me, today we're going to be planting rice for the sports festival, so we harvest it in 7 months. I said, oh, that sounds quite nice. And they said, well, you are planting rice. And I was wearing my suit, and the principal said, like, oh, it's okay. He, you know, you're going to be knee-deep in water when you're planting
rice. Oh, my God.
He's like, I have some shorts for you. He gave me some Umbro soccer shorts from 1971 that did not fit my fat ass at all. And it was like the tightest tube skirt. And I had to sit there and squat over the rice field under back-breaking conditions for 4 hours. I have an interesting picture I can show you that there's beautiful fields of perfectly placed rice paddies, and then there's mine, which looks like a bomb went off. It's just a disaster area.
Good God.
So yeah, that was a very unusual experience for 3 months, and that was 5 elementary schools and 4 junior highs that I rotated.
Jesus. Over a 3-month period.
Yeah. So each week I would go to all of the schools and try, like Monday I'd go to these 2 schools, on Tuesday I'd go to these 2. And you know, you're learning a lot about Japanese lunches. They you have to eat with the kids. You know, these are all part of the expectations.
Did you have any trouble communicating with the students?
I had an immense amount of trouble communicating with the students. But you know, children in elementary school and junior high are quite eager, especially to meet a foreigner who Joetsu is very rare to see, you know, on a face-to-face basis. So in that regard, I think it was the best experience you could possibly ask for to be a teacher in this country. My advice from this real weird story: don't try to get a job teaching, I think, in Tokyo or Osaka or these big cities.
I've always tried to say that as well.
It's a good rule, right?
Absolutely.
Experience Japan for what it is before you try to say, like, well, I want to go because I'm really interested in anime or video games or manga.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. Like, where I was for 3 years was about, what, 150 miles north of where you ended up.
Yep.
It was extremely rural, but I love it. I loved every moment of it, and it's a beautiful place. And most people living in major cities like Tokyo or Osaka or Nagoya, they don't get to appreciate that. They don't get to wake up on like a beautiful sunny day, drive through some rice fields, look at a volcano, and there's something magical about it. And living in Sendai, it's great, but I miss that. I do miss that a lot.
Yeah, me
but that
too.
Was this only 3 months then, this job?
Yeah, so that was a 3 month job, and then we kind of went our separate ways. Everyone.
Oh.
Kind of, because we couldn't get the recontraction.
Yeah, yeah.
It went to Jets, actually. So they brought in a whole bunch. Yeah.
God damn it.
They got Jets to come in and replace all of the schools. And I was kind of out of money and out of time. But I had met a guy who said, you know, I think that you are a really great teacher. He was wrong. And he said, I want to open an English school inside of a mall inside Joetsu.
Right.
Like it's called the Ito-Yokado, like a big department store.
Okay. And what, for some context, Joetsu is probably the second biggest city in Niigata,
I think, maybe? Niigata City is number one.
And then Joetsu. I'm not a fan of Joetsu, because every time I drive through it, there's absolutely nothing there. We went through it on Journey Across Japan for the Joey segment early on. And my resounding memory of that area is just nothingness and desperation at trying to find ideas to make it interesting.
That sounds a lot like my life. it's a good fit for me. You know, the cool thing about Joetsu is this. It's where I lived. I was 10 minutes by bicycle to the Sea of Japan, like literally the
beach.
That's cool. And I was 40 minutes by train to some of the best snowboarding mountains in Japan.
Well, it's got that going for it then. The nature side of things. Right?
The downside to Joetsu is that it is extraordinarily rural. And the temperature on the winter, it gets the most snowfall on record in Japan.
Yeah. I've driven through Niigata in the snow. And it's formidable. It's really unpleasant.
You can't. My first time, somebody told me, like, oh, be careful. Every couple of hours, please open your door during the snowstorm. And I said, okay, I'm fine. I woke up in the morning, and it was about 4 feet of snow, and I could not get out of my apartment.
Oh, my God.
I had to go to the window. And
oh, my God.
It was absolute madness in one night.
Jesus.
So, yeah, it was a great experience, but I transitioned out of teaching at an actual school that's recognized by, you know, the Board of Education into what's called an eikaiwa.
English conversation class.
Yeah, it's private lessons. And this one was created from the ground up by an insane man who put all of his chips in on me.
Oh, God.
A terrible idea. And
how did you meet this guy?
He was, remember when I told you about the swinging lamp and we're looking at the exits? He was their contact in Joetsu to help explain to these new foreigners, here's your job. Here's what, it was just like a free agent that they hired briefly to explain.
He spoke English.
He did. He
was some like an interpreter chap.
Yeah, I think he lived in Los Angeles for quite some time.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he thought, this is a great way to make some money. We're going to do this thing. And
you must have been like, oh, this is great.
Well, yeah, because he offered a significant pay increase.
Fantastic.
I also want to point out one thing. I'm remiss to mention this. When I did get hired at this company, I did work on a tourist visa for about 11 weeks of my 13-week contract.
Oh, God.
This is illegal.
Yeah.
This is definitely illegal. And I understand because of the situation with the earthquake, there was some backup at the immigration offices.
Mm.
But I want to remind everyone that sometimes you have to be really diligent about how to get people to make sure your visa's clear, get those things updated, because it can be kind of vague in Japan sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, just sign a contract and work.
Yeah, there's a lot of, they're called black companies, aren't
black
they?
Black companies, right.
Yeah, organizations will screw you over, basically, or promise lots of things, underdeliver, and exploit you. And that is exactly what it sounds like you went through with this experience.
Yeah, but I mean, it was fine, though. But then, this guy, we started in Ikawa, where I was in an open-faced, there's no doors, it's just in the mall, and I have a loud voice, so I'm sitting there screaming English at adults.
Is there Was it a store in the mall?
Yeah, it was like, but it didn't have any doors. And I remember, I said, you know, I'll do this, but I don't want to write the curriculum. I'm not qualified. And he said, that's okay. My brother's going to write it.
Right.
So his brother wrote a bunch of AB dialogues. Like, but his brother, I think, might have been quite insane, because we would have dialogues like going to the grocery store, and I'd be person A, and I'd say like, excuse me, where are the grapes? And the person B would be like, here is a shoe. I'd say, oh, thank you, but I'm looking for a pizza.
Standard conversation.
Have you been to the market? And I'm like, what? And so we couldn't quite parse what he was trying to say. It just seemed like scribblings of a madman. So we had to cut his material. I had to make it up on myself, and that can be very stressful. So be ready to make your own materials. Don't expect everything to be handed to you in some of these jobs. I stayed there for about 8 months as it slowly became clear this was a black company.
I mean, at what point did you realize, uh-oh, I've made a massive mistake here?
About 3 months into my contract on my birthday, my boss, who was the sole proprietor, came to my birthday party, and his entire arm was in a bandage, bloodied up.
Oh, my God.
And he had been in a physical altercation with his family and punched out a window. And then later on in that evening, he confessed, while quite drunk, "You know, we've been getting all these money up front from customers to pay for lesson." He was like, "Well, I gambled it all away."
Oh, no.
So he spent it all in a local pachinko parlor. So now we have no money to pay my salary or my health insurance and things. And we don't have any money because he spent it all on gambling.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so this became clear that I need to make a change because my visa is going to run out. And I don't think this man has the qualifications to renew it.
Or the sanity, by the sound of things.
Yeah. So that was in Ikaiwa. Really tough experience. But overall, I decided to...
What were the people like you met?
So the students were quite nice.
Oh, good.
In the countryside, their English level can range from, I'd say, very poor to average. You're not going to get a lot of fluent speakers. You might get some hobbyists who are very interested in it.
And what were the working hours like?
The working hours at the original job, the 3 month contract at the schools, was your standard be there at 8 for the morning meeting, and you can leave around 2:30, or sometimes earlier during if it's an elementary school.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Roles included normally teaching English lessons, participating in lunchtime, and doing recess with the children, playing kickball.
And what about the Ikaiwa?
Ikaiwa was a bit more strict. It's kind of like show up at 11 and finish around 8 or 9. So you go there when the mall opened, and you'd stay until the mall
You go there when the mall opened.
Yeah, interesting thing, I didn't know this. I was by myself the first 2 months at this mall, and just me, and we had
so
no customers.
Weird.
But in Japan, when the mall opens, everybody who owns a shop stands outside of it and says, "Welcome" in Japanese, to any passing customers for about 10 minutes. I didn't quite catch the word, so I was saying, "Irashaimasen," which means you're not welcome at this. And he would call me and say, "Did we get any new people come in?" I go, "Some of them were kind of interested, but they just walked away. I don't understand. Maybe I'm scaring them." I tanked our potential. So.
And then how the hell did you get out of there? This must have been so surreal. There must have been a moment standing in a mall in Joetsu with people looking angry at you as you say, "Irashaimasen." It must have been a point where you think, "What have I done? Why have I come to Japan? How have I ended up here? Is this going to get better?"
Yeah, there was
a lot of people would have been like, "It's time to go back to Kansas now."
Well, as bad as it was, you know, Japan is a very interesting place. And I felt like every day I was here, I was experiencing something new or dire or interesting or fantastic. So I wanted to stay, but I felt like Joetsu had run its course.
Right.
I wanted to go to Tokyo now. I wanted to try Yokohama or a big city. And I wanted to see what that was like before said, "It's over, I'm going home."
So at this point, it's about 2012.
Yeah, it's 2012.
I've just arrived in Japan.
And I'm trying to get as far
kilometers,
as away from you as
200
possible.
Kilometers north in a field, I'm there. 200 kilometers south, you're in a mall trying to get people in for an Ikaiwa.
Yeah, and we didn't have a lot of success. But I decided to make a change. I took a bus from Niigata to... because I couldn't afford any trains, and there was no Shinkansen at this time.
No, there wasn't.
They were building it. And I took a bus that took about 18 hours to... it was very cheap, like 30 bucks. I made it to a friend's house, and I had an application set in for another Ikaiwa called... well, it was an acting through drama.
Right.
That's what it was. So
Sounds good.
It was, and I like acting. The premise was very interesting. It was, instead of doing like grammar and vocabulary, it was, let's put on plays and productions while using English. I thought that's amazing. The pay was good. There was a nice little bonus system. There was a lot of opportunity for advancement.
What could possibly go wrong?
There's no way this can go tits up. There's just no way. So I go to the guy, who's a nice bloke from England, and he goes to this field, and I'm at the end of my rope, and I say, "Listen, I just have to know today, can I get this job?" He looked me square in the eyes, extended his hand, and said, "Welcome home."
I mean, that sounds beautiful, but also a bit worrying.
This is the worst job I've ever had. It was the absolute... This is the one that sent me home. I gained about 2 stones. I don't know what that... I gained 8 kilos.
Oh, God.
I lost an inch on my hairline. It was absolutely dreadful how stressful this job was.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
This week, there's been loads going on across Stack. Over on the Luke and Pete Show, I'm telling Luke about why my hairstyle has been bothering children.
And she says, why have you got your hair like that?
Yeah.
Why have you got your hair in a ponytail? We've been told that we're not to talk to men who have ponytails.
Your parents.
And yeah, but that wasn't the parents. They didn't say that.
Right.
She'd just been told at school or something, never to trust a man with a ponytail.
Meanwhile, the book club is back with a cracker on Football Ramble Presents. Kate and Jim were joined by Simon Cooper to talk about his new book, delving into the heart of Barcelona Football Club and what its legends were really like.
Johan Cruyff, in my humble opinion, he's the kind of Freud or Marx or Einstein of football. He invented modern football, but he was also a lunatic. Cruyff was a guy who walks into a room and says, you're doing it all wrong, you should do what I say.
Listen to the Luke and Pete Show and Football Ramble Presents every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why did he say welcome home?
I think that, you know, now looking back, this job employed maybe about 100 people. And it was constantly cycling in and out because people couldn't hack it. It was so much stress and it was so difficult that he tried very hard to honey it and make it sound like this is going to be a great opportunity for you. And he did. I felt like this was it. And they helped me get accommodations. They helped me set everything up. And then the hell began. And it was truly horrific.
How can it get much worse than standing in a mall?
So
doing what you did before?
This one is challenging because this had classes from ages zero, literally zero. I one time taught a woman who was still pregnant, and I had to teach her stomach English words.
What?
Yes, and so...
Wait, what?
She came in, like 7 months pregnant, and I said to my boss, I said, who do I teach to the mother? Does she want to learn like some vocabulary when the baby's born? And they're like, no, she wants you to just to talk to her stomach. So I was sitting there giving instruction, and I remember very specifically,
no.
She held her tummy and she said, I think he's getting it. And I thought, oh dear God.
It's time to get back to Kansas again.
They wouldn't have me back. But that was tough because you had classes from zero all the way until 80s, you know.
It was, yeah.
But most of them were children. And the big challenge of this was some of the classes, this is the first time children have ever been separated from their parents.
Yeah.
In a private setting before.
Right.
So you can imagine it's pure chaos, crying, pandemonium, puking, shitting. It's just God. Everybody is doing everything. And then another, you get elementary school students. I remember one time, my first lesson, this kid came in, and we have 5 minutes of playtime.
Yeah.
We're playing blocks. And I say, I'm going to be right back. I have to go get a wet tissue to clean up this thing. I come back, and he's standing in the corner, shirt off, swinging it like a lasso.
Oh, my God.
And I said, please put your clothes back on. And
Jesus
Christ. For 30 minutes, it was unable to get this sixth grader, or whatever his age was, to put his shirt back on.
Bloody hell.
So that was, the hours were intense, things of that nature. It was very hard.
So what made it the worst job?
There was one day in particular I knew that I had to get out. Other than the extreme hours, other than the forced overtime and the just unreasonable requests made of you from the boss.
To talk to children.
To talk to
babies, unborn babies, teach them English.
Impossible. But the one that I remember the most, right?
Giving English classes to a fetus. That is like a CV-worthy achievement, Pete.
Yeah, well, I made it, but... There was one class in particular. It was in a very wealthy area of Tokyo, Futako Tamagawa, very beautiful and regal station.
Yes, yes.
This gentleman came in. Usually, it was with his. It was father and child. It was like oyako, they say, with child.
Mm.
And I usually taught them with the mother and the son. But this time, the dad came in, and he did not seem too keen on being a part of the lesson. He was kind of like, and I said, well, man, it's kind of, you have to be a part. It's together. So I had my stuffed animal, which was like a little teddy bear that I had to demonstrate the lesson with. And we played a very fun game called Wiggy Waggy.
Are you familiar? No, I'm not familiar with Wiggy Waggy.
I thought it would, you know, be across the seven seas at this point. Wiggy Waggy is a simple repeat after me game where you go like this. Wiggy Waggy, Wiggy Waggy, jelly in the bowl.
It sounds like the sort of thing you get arrested for, like saying something like that out loud.
I think that's how they lost that contract and you got to, it's Wiggy Waggy. So I have my toy, and you know, you're supposed to lift up the baby's arms and make it dance with the Wiggy Waggy and make him, you know, jelly.
Right.
And I said, all right, repeat after me. Wiggy Waggy, jelly in the bowl.
Yeah.
And the guy very half-heartedly kind of went, you know, Wiggy Waggy, jelly in the bowl.
Right.
I said, listen, man, we got 50 minutes. I need you to either be in this with me 100% or we just sit here and talk about sports. And he was like, you know what? All right, I'll give it a shot. And I said, all right. So this one, I said, we're going to level it up with a little more gestures. And I, you know, I took the little animal, Wiggy Waggy, Wiggy Waggy. And then on Jelly in the Bowl, I lifted the little stuffed animal above my head and shook it, you know, like a little fun little woo. And he was like, okay, that looks fun. He got smirked. And he said,
how old was his kid?
Must have been 7, 8 months.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
very young.
Quite young, yeah. And he said, Wiggy Waggy, Wiggy Waggy, jelly in the... And when he lifted the kid, I thought, this is the moment that it's going to be great. Well, the kid shit on his face. It was horrible.
No.
Yeah, he full liquid diarrhea.
Oh, God.
Right above his head. And I remember I needed to quit when the man looked at me dead in the eye and there was literal poop dripping from his nose.
Oh, my God.
And the kid was having fun, but it's a good game.
That guy, how did he not murder you?
Well, I don't think it was actually my fault that, you know, the kid shit. But, I mean, looking at me, I don't blame him. But the issue was...
Oh, God.
We both knew this isn't worth it.
The guy who ran the place, what was he like?
Well, this was actually a...
Welcome home.
He was
British, you said.
He was. And he was a nice man, collected records, all that jazz. But the interesting thing was there was about 12 people at the home booth, the home base...
Right.
Who kind of made this thing run. Because they had 30-plus schools around Tokyo and Yokohama and Chiba.
Yeah.
So he was in charge of, you know, relations with contracts, and we had trainers, and we had all these things.
Did he find out about the Wiggy Waggy incident?
Of course not. I mean, like, there are so many terrible things that have happened in these halls where you just... It's just... There's no place to complain to. Unfortunately, I lasted about a year and plus there. So that's only 2 years in Japan. I've had three jobs.
And you're working long hours again?
This was the worst. At one point, I truthfully worked about 70-plus days straight.
70 days straight without a holiday? Without a day off?
A day off.
That was insanity. How are you alive?
It was really bad for my health. I'll be honest. Every night was like a gyudon beef bowl for dinner. And I remember when I got home to the station, it'd be this long walk back to my house thinking, how can I possibly... do this again tomorrow. And this is not unique to me. I think what I'm trying to say is be very careful when accepting the jobs. I think for most people listening, Eikaiwas, I would be hesitant to recommend those experiences.
Yeah, I don't know too many people that have had positive experiences doing Eikaiwas. I did have a friend, Regan, who predates our friendship, but he is an Australian chap that worked in Nagoya, and he generally spoke highly of his Eikaiwa job. He enjoyed it, I think, but the hours weren't too extreme. So it really is on a case-by-case basis. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know who you're going to deal with, right?
My advice would be definitely take an ALT job. They're much more supported in terms
of... Assistant language teacher.
Yeah, like the ones where you are in an actual school, because those opportunities allow you to learn on the fly and you have a bit more stability with like a help from actual teachers.
Absolutely.
Then if you want to kind of test out the waters, at least you've been here a bit to try out an Eikaiwa.
So what year is this now?
It is only year two.
It's like 2013.
2013.
I've just met Natsuki.
You're having fun.
In Yamagata somewhere at the same time.
You are starting to dabble in making YouTube videos.
Meanwhile, you've got a kid
pooping on his
going
father.
To the toilet on his dad's head in a Eikaiwa.
So at this point, I got out and I applied for a very famous company called Interac.
Yes.
This is a placement company.
They're kind of like Jets, but...
paid less.
Paid slightly less and not government run, but there are some benefits. You often get to choose where you're located.
Yes, or there's some discussion there about like, no, I don't want to teach in this part, I'll wait. And so... They offered me a job at an elementary school, and I thought, absolutely not. I'd rather stay at this shit job where kids poop on each other.
Right.
Second one was, I was like, they said, how about a junior high? And I said, that's better, I'll take it. But it was like 50 minutes away from my apartment.
Right.
And I thought, you know, that's too much. Then they called me again and said, well, how about a high school job? And I said, now that is the only place I had not taught yet. I taught elementary, junior high.
A fetus, no less.
A fetus. And
from fetus to 12 years old.
But I thought, this might be an interesting opportunity. So I said, I'll take it. How close is it? 10 minutes from my door.
Wow, that's lucky.
It's quite lucky.
At last, God has smiled favorably upon you.
This was the best job I've ever had.
Hey.
It was very good. The pay was quite low. I want to remind everybody, if you work for these placement companies, here's what you're going to get into. You get a set fee. Usually, back then, 8-9 years ago, you're talking about $2,500 a month pre-tax.
Right.
Then on August, you get 40% pay. So your paycheck will be...
That's on Interac.
That's on Interac.
On
usually.
Jet, you get a full salary, yeah.
Then on March and April, because the school year begins in April in Japan, you get prorated pay for March and April because those are not a lot of classes.
Right.
Those can be even worse than August. And then you have December, which you get 60 to 70% pay because of the winter holidays.
It's pretty tough to live off that salary, I imagine.
It can be.
Especially in Tokyo, where you were.
Yeah, I was in Yokohama at this time.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to lie, there were times where, I had to eat eggs for almost 12 weeks.
Oh, my God.
I had a sack of rice
and
eggs.
Like Gaston, well, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, except he was really in great shape. I was slowly deteriorating. But rice and eggs in convenience stores were all I had, and soups. And then one time I had to go to the local park and steal a roll of toilet paper because I couldn't afford it and
bloody
take
hell.
It home to eat.
Jesus.
No, but it was like, it was you got to plan accordingly. And if you live in Tokyo or one of these big cities, it can be hard to manage your finances if you want to go out a lot with your friends and do karaoke and drinking or even eating out a lot. It's pretty tough sometimes.
Absolutely.
Those months that you don't get paid well. But this school was great because they allow, I think teaching high school for a lot of people would be the best alternative because the kids are a bit more mature.
Yeah.
You can talk to them about their opinions.
I mean, I taught 16 to 18 and you could have like an interesting conversation. I don't think I could have taught anyone under 16. I struggled trying to get in with the youth and understand their mindset. The 16 to 18 year old Japanese teenager. Below that, I would have struggled.
It's tough.
I wouldn't have been able to do wiggy waggy, wiggy fucking, like, no.
No?
Or no, I wouldn't be able to do that. So
I'd
say senior high school is the best age to teach.
I agree. Without a doubt. Unless you can get a college position in case you have a master's or something like that. So I taught at this school for about 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
I ended up progressing in Interact to become their head teacher, which was kind of a training role for other. I led the monthly meetings. I did get awarded a motivational teacher of the year. So I want to make this kind of clear. You know, a lot of people in Japan really shit on others who teach. It's kind of a big joke among the expats. Oh, well, if you can't do anything, you can be a teacher. This is 100% accurate. I get it. A lot of people come here because teaching allows them to get a visa, which I don't disagree with. And they just want to say I want to live in Japan and I kind of do teaching for fun. It's just whatever. After a few years, I took it quite seriously. I actually got into making my own lessons and I was really fascinated by it. So there is an opportunity to be proud of your work if you're interested in it as a career.
Right.
But you know what? I don't disparage you if you're like, nah, I'm just here because it's basically a 2-year holiday.
Yeah, I mean, my stance was I saw teaching as a way into Japan. But certainly I took the job seriously. I didn't just rock up and try to not do a good job. I did my best to try and educate kids or make learning English fun, right?
And I think that's an important part of enjoying the job and staying here longer.
Exactly. So after 4 years, you left that job.
I did. And so on this time, there was a direct hire position. These are extraordinarily elusive. This means that we've cut out Interact completely, and the school has directly hired you as an employee, much like they would an actual teacher.
The benefits are more pay.
More pay, health insurance, pension. Even some schools allow you to get a bonus.
And the downsides?
Incredibly horrific working hours and expectations.
Right. And that's where you are now.
That's where I've been the last 5 years. And to be fair, this school, I think, has done a lot of good for me. It allowed me financially to finally pursue other projects I couldn't do before. That being said, you have to do things like stay for club activities. If the boss says, tonight we're going out drinking, you cannot decline. You kind of are forced to culturally to go
right,
there.
Right.
The other teachers see you as an actual member of the staff, not as a unique little token or trinket that is like, look, our foreigner.
I was a trinket.
You were a trinket. You were, and that's okay for those jobs, but this one, you know, you got to go to all the meetings.
You don't get a get out of jail free pass.
0%.
Right.
And if you want to take off a holiday, you have to go to really through the chain of command, and they've declined me several times saying, well, you know, this really comes at a busy time. Can you reschedule it?
You have to put your job very much before your personal life.
Yeah, and at this one, you know, a lot of schools that are private or direct hire do have schools on Saturday, so you have to kind of adjust your expectations to being there possibly 6 days a week.
And you hope, so you, how do you look at this job overall, favorably or unfavorably?
This, I think, was a tale of really two things. At first, this changed my life for the better. I was able to get out of that kind of, you know, paycheck to paycheck lifestyle.
Yeah.
And making that kind of money and being entrusted with the responsibility. I was a homeroom teacher, so I saw the same kids every morning and taught them. Giving more responsibility to me, I thought, was a great and terrible mistake on their behalf. But for me, it was a wonderful experience to really try to master this profession. And I think I did pretty well, but the problem was, as I started to go on trips with you or talk to you more, I have this desire to do something greater with my free time, and this job does not currently allow me to do that.
And so for the first time, while you were teaching, you started doing Twitch, right, and streaming video games and getting back to your sort of acting and performing career.
Correct. Even though I'd been doing Cool Japan off and on for 8 years, that's a one-off Saturday afternoon or something like that. During the coronavirus, of course, you know, Ian from... You took him on the Journey Across Japan.
Yeah, the producer of Journey Across Japan, Ian.
He and I started a podcast during those corona days because we had nothing to do, right? And we were doing a basketball podcast. And at the end of that, I said, well, I want to do like a Twitch part of it. Like a final show. I did that and immediately was like, this is what I want to do.
Right.
So I started putting in an insane amount of hours individually after the podcast had finished that season of doing like every night I wanted to stream. And eventually I don't know what quite changed. I think it might have been being in your video that allowed people to find the channel. That allowed me to finally realize, you know, there's actually some potential to do this full time.
Yeah, so it seems you started Twitch as a hobby, in the same way I started YouTube as a hobby, while I was working as a teacher, and hopefully this will now be, one day, your main thing.
Well, to put a little button on it, I've decided to retire from the prestigious job of teaching this year. This is my 10 years in the game. I feel like I've experienced almost everything you can as a teacher. I've done solo lessons, group lessons, all ages. It was an amazing run, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to teach in this country. But I think it's not for me anymore.
I think the problem is, even after 3 years, I felt like I'd learned a lot about the job and done as much as I could, and I felt... You know, you teach kids, you get on with them, they're great, and then they leave the school and you never see them again.
Yep.
It's the problem with teaching. You spend all your time trying to help folks, then they disappear and you never see them again.
So you can't imagine a scenario where you do this till you're 65?
No. Maybe. I think I love teaching. If it's teaching something that I'm good at, like YouTube maybe, or hopefully filmmaking one day, I love teaching something I know and I'm experienced in, but teaching English, it wasn't really for me. Yeah.
Really quick, I'm curious. You did touch on it briefly. What were the pros of teaching for you? Like the great points? There's none! No wiggy waggies?
It was fun talking to the kids and trying. I mean, I tried to steer them in the direction of trying to do something exciting for their career. Because I used to speak to my students, and they'd be like, oh, I want to work in an office. And I'd be like, come on, you can have a dream, have something exciting to guide you. And a few students I do think I was able to make an impact on, and they did sort of thank me later on that I nudged them in a certain direction. But
what were the cons?
Everything. Now I look back on the period favorably, but on my last year I was very restless and wanting to do something else. It was very much a stopgap until I had I knew what I wanted to do with my life. And it sounds like you're on the track. So I know a lot of people that teach and love it and enjoy it, and if they want to keep doing that, that's great. But I also know people that teach because they're too scared to switch careers and do something they're truly passionate about, because it's hard to do something in Japan and make that transition. And I'll always try and encourage them to do what they want to do, actually, so they don't regret it later on down the line.
Well, it's actually interesting you mentioned that. You basically have been very supportive in my endeavor to try this whole Twitch thing, and it hadn't been for you kind of saying like, mate, really re-examine what you're doing at this job. So that allows me to say briefly about the pros. It's great to get into the country. It gets you a visa. It gets you an opportunity to experience it. It's a really good introduction to Japanese culture and working conditions.
Absolutely.
You'll meet some amazing teachers, and you'll have some amazing relationships through that. And finally, I think for me, the greatest thing I got from teaching, like you said, was having an opportunity to teach really cool kids as they grow up as young adults and hopefully go on to do some sort of thing that they're excited about that you may have helped in any small capacity. It was very rewarding.
Absolutely.
So those are the pros. The cons are, you know, you're not going to have a lot of free time.
The key word is inflexibility.
Yes.
Even when I had my job, I couldn't take a day off easily. It was had to go through like four layers of people, and then they would often say no.
To be fair, if you were working as a, you know, an office job in Kansas, it's going to be tough to get some of those free time as well. So if you want to test out Japan, if you are interested, there's no shame in being a teacher. It's certainly not you know, giving it a year. But my recommendation would be try an actual school first before jumping into an Eikaiwa, because those things will make you want to kill someone. So there you go.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully you'll be able to do Twitch full-time soon, Premier 2. It's taking off nicely. You get quite a lot. You've got how many people follow now?
Oh, 20,000.
Jesus Christ.
That was
started in like...
Last October.
But really, this year, you've really gone all out. And this is the year.
Yeah.
You've gone from zero to
20,000
in like a matter of months, which I think's incredible and a good sign of things to come when you do actually quit your job.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate you even having me on here to talk about that poor man who is never going to go to an English lesson ever again because his child shit on him.
Oh, dear. But hopefully for you guys listening, it's given you something to think about teaching. I think, as you can tell from Pete and I, there's lots of ups and downs. Certainly for Pete, there's been a lot more downs in the long run. But three bad jobs, two good ones.
Yep, not bad.
That's not too bad.
And I would even count the first 3 months as a good job. It was just rural...
Yeah, that's
yeah.
True.
So it was just a unique experience where I was planting rice and feeding chickens,
living the dream,
riding unicycles. It was a wild experience.
Riding unicycles.
Yeah, they didn't have kickball or baseball when recess started in the deep country. They pulled open this giant door, and kids would come out on giant 8 foot stilts and
oh
unicycles and pogo sticks.
It's like 1800s.
It was
a 19th century
circus.
Amusement.
I thought this was a terrible horror show. But it was a great experience of the first 3 months. So it was only just the Eikaiwa jobs that really wrecked me. So yeah, careful. Caveat emptor.
Absolutely. We have run out of time this week for questions, guys. Hopefully Pete's going to be back next week. We shall see.
We'll see how this one goes.
But for now, guys, as always, many thanks for tuning into the Abroad in Japan podcast. I hope that's given you something to think about. If you have any questions about teaching or life in Japan, as always, send them to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again right here on the Abroad in Japan podcast. Bye for now. And thank you, Pete, for coming.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye.
Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym... for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this
yeah.
shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.